So, before I read the koan for this morning, I want to give you some background on the characters and events that occurred prior to the main case of this koan. So the story opens with an illiterate woodcutter, Hui Nung. His father had apparently died at a very early age and had left his mother penniless. So to support the family, Hui Nung became a woodcutter. One day, when he was delivering wood, he heard a monk reciting from the Diamond Sutra. Dwelling nowhere, the mind comes forth. Hear that? Dwelling nowhere, the mind comes forth. And upon hearing those words, Hui Nung came to a very deep awakening. He asked the monk who his teacher was and was told it was the fifth ancestor, Hung Jin. And then something really remarkable happened. He found a neighbor who was willing to support his mother so he could set off and meet Hung Jin. When he arrived, Hung Jin said, "Where are you from that you come to this mountain asking obeisance to me? What is it you seek here?" And Hui Nung said, "I come from Ling Nain in the north. I've come this long distance seeking no particular thing, only the Buddha Dharma." Hung Jin said, "If you're from Ling Nain, then you're a barbarian," which meant a foreigner. "How can you become a Buddha?" Hui Nung said, "Though people from the north and the south are different, there is no north or south in the Dharma or in the Buddha nature. Though my barbarian's body and your body are not the same, what difference is there in our Buddha nature?" So Hung Jin then assigned Hui Nung to the harvesting shed to pound rice. Several months passed, and Hung Jin made a decision to declare a successor. So he announced that anyone who felt worthy of transmission should submit a poem that would reveal his understanding of the way. The author of the best poem would be declared the next master in line. So all of the monks then looked to Shen Chu to write the poem because he was the head monk and the monk they felt had the clearest insight. Shen Chu, though, wasn't so sure that he was ready. So he wrote the poem anonymously and decided, you know, if it wasn't approved, he wouldn't step forward. But if it was, then he would come forth. So this is what he wrote. He wrote, "The body is the Bodhi tree. The mind is like a clear mirror. Moment by moment, wipe the mirror carefully. Let no dust light upon it." Hung Jin praised the poem. He asked the monks to commit it to memory. No mention, however, of making him successor. So when Hui Nung heard the poem, he recognized right away that the monk's realization was lacking. So he asked another monk to write the following poem on the wall, because remember, he could not read or write. "Bodhi really has no tree. The mirror, too, has no stand. From the beginning, there is nothing at all. Where can any dust alight?" The fifth patriarch recognize this poem as worthy and as the expression of Hui Nung. So he took his slipper and rubbed it off and declared it as worthless. Later that night, he called Hui Nung to his room, gave him instruction in the Diamond Sutra well into the night, and then gave him transmission. He said that the monks would be very jealous and angry when they found out the robe and bowl was turned over to an illiterate woodcutter. He then took Hui Nung to the ferry and told him to run for his life and wait for a long time before teaching. Of course, when the monks heard that the robe and bowl was gone and that the ignorant woodcutter had carried them away, they were furious. They were certain the fifth patriarch had made a big mistake. Maybe he was getting old. Maybe he was losing it. And I read that about 200 of them set off to right the wrong and to get the robe and bowl back. The pursuit went on, and gradually everyone dropped out, gave up, went back to the monastery. Everyone except a monk named Mio. He exerted and exhausted every bit of anger and judgment, thought itself, and arrived with nothing left in his mind. And that's where this morning's koan begins. This is case number 17 of the Mu Mon Khan. Here's the main case. The sixth patriarch was pursued by Monk Mio up to Dayore. The patriarch, seeing Mio coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, "The robe and bowl symbolize the faith. Why are they to be thought? Are they to be fought for? I allow you to take them away." Mio tried to lift them, but they were as immovable as a mountain. Hesitating and trembling, Mio said, "I have come for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you to teach your servant." The sixth patriarch said, "When you were pursuing me and were not thinking of good or evil, but only of obtaining the treasure, where was your original self?" At this, Mio was all at once enlightened. His whole body was dripping with sweat. With tears flowing, he made obeisance and asked, "Besides the secret words and meanings, is there anything else deeper still?" The patriarch said, "What I have just told you is not secret. You have realized your true self, and what is secret is in you yourself." Mio said, "When I was at Obai together with the other monks, I did not awaken to my true self. Thanks to your instruction, which is to the point, I am like one who has drunk water and actually experienced himself, whether it is cold or warm. You are my master." The patriarch said, "We both have Obai for our teacher. Hold fast to what you've learned from him." In the commentary, of the sixth patriarch, it is to be said that in an emergency, he did something extraordinary. He has a grandmotherly kindness. It is as if he had peeled a fresh lychee, removed its seed, and then put it in your mouth, so you need only swallow it. And the verse, "You describe it in vain, you picture it to no avail. You can never praise it fully. Stop all your groping and maneuvering. There is nowhere to hide your true self. When the universe is annihilated, it remains indestructible." So, this is a really interesting koan. It's considered to be a very important koan. And what makes a koan important? It's you. It must speak to you. It must be about you. But how could this be about you? Where can you find yourself here? This is the focus I would like to explore this morning. Let's start with Hui Neng. He was a spiritual genius. Great. How do we enter there? For many years, I had this fantasy that all Zen masters were brilliant scholars, were amazing at everything they did. Zen in the art of archery, Zen in the art of flower arranging, Zen in the martial arts, you know? Everything they touched, strength, beauty, brilliance. Of course, all of this completely irrelevant. Here we have Wen Yun. He was illiterate. He cut wood. Then he pounded rice. He didn't train in the monastery. He didn't go to Doksan. He didn't read the sutras. He couldn't read the sutras. And of course, all of this was completely irrelevant. What matters here is this dwelling nowhere. The mind comes forth. This is the key. This is the place we can stop watching Wei Nung from the outside and make this koan about ourselves. This is the place we can go eyebrow to eyebrow with Wei Nung. So how do we step into this mind that abides nowhere? How do we find our own spiritual genius? How do we become one with this Wei Nung? What do we have to do? What do we have to know? I want to read you a poem by Richard Clark. It points directly to this non-abiding mind. And it's titled, You Just Don't Need to Know. You do not need to know what appears on every page of your life, nor keep current with each new thing, event, or thought. The carpet on the floor, the chair, the tree, the bird outside the window, a stick of incense burning, all are content beyond contentment. Such bodhisattvas rise up in all directions perfectly, without agenda or intention, purely manifesting all that needs to be known to be free of all suffering. There's so much you just don't need to know. That's why this koan is about you. Dwelling nowhere, the mind comes forth. The mind that abides nowhere, your mind, Wei Nung's mind, the carpet, the cushion, the lectern, one mind, the mind that abides nowhere. Moving on, Wei Nung sets off on foot to find Hong Zhen. How would you arrive? What if you left everything? The fifth ancestor examines Wei Nung. How would you respond? Step right in. You come to the Living Dharma Center. Paul asks you where you're from and what you want, and you tell him your deepest truth. And he tells you to forget it. It'll never happen for the likes of you. You can't sit with the rest of us, but you could sweep the place if you like. How would you deal with that rejection? Can you feel the difference between an ego response to this and the innocent, simple response of Wei Nung? What difference is there in our Buddha nature? What difference indeed? No ego, just this mind that abides nowhere. I once heard Ken MacLeod define Buddha nature as what's left when all the confusion is gone. Wei Nung manifested this kind of clarity, confident he was enough. Words of rejection, being given the lowliest job, being denied access to the meditation hall, enough, all enough. No objections. No stopping places, no confusion, just the mind that abides nowhere. Now we come to the section of koan that shocked me when I first heard it many years ago. It never occurred to me that monks would be jealous. On Tuesday nights, we've talked about the six realms, and one of them being the Titan realm, one of the six realms of cyclic existence, the realm of jealousy. These monks had been sitting for at least 20 years, many of them many more, and along comes this illiterate barbarian, and he gets to run off with the most treasured symbol, the robe and bowl. Remember, in this Titan realm, the trunk of the tree is in the Titan realm, but all the fruit falls in the God realm, and it's not fair. But what makes us think that these monks or any one of us should be spared the experience of the Titan realm? We feel what we feel. What can we do? We share this realm with our arrogant, judgmental, so sure their opinion is right, Dharma monk brothers. We're just like these monks, like it or not. We're all in this together. Why be shocked? We're human and we're deluded. No problem. Just don't refuse to see yourself in these monks. Don't stand outside them and judge them. Enter right there and feel it. So off the monks go to write the wrong that's been done. Eventually, they drop off until only Monk Myo is left. You know, we all start out this practice wanting to get something, pursuing something outside ourselves. We all start out chasing the robe and bowl. Most abandon the pursuit. There are very few who can find themselves in Monk Myo. Myo was determined. Nothing was going to stop him. Maybe in many ways he was the most deluded. But he kept on. He kept going, one foot after another, tired, doggedly pursuing. What? Anger finally gone, ideas exhausted, judgments forgotten. Robe and bowl. Justice. Until he arrives at the end of his journey. We must all become Myo. Holding to our practice with our whole heart. So we arrive at the place we fantasized and imagined, and as they say, the thrill is gone. Only just this remains. Myo was disciplined. He gave his whole life to discipline. He offered himself wholeheartedly. He holds back nothing. And he fails. They say he can't even move the robe and bowl. This isn't a miracle. Something deep inside Myo opened, and the whole world stopped. No right, no wrong, no good, no bad. And Wei Nung asks, when you were pursuing me and not thinking of good or evil, but only of obtaining the treasure, where was your original self? Mumon comments, of the sixth patriarch, it has to be said that in an emergency, he did something extraordinary. He has a grandmotherly kindness. It is as if he had peeled a fresh lychee, removed its seed, and put it in your mouth, so you only have to swallow it. In this koan, Wei Nung is asking you this question, putting the lychee fruit in your mouth. A couple of days ago, I read another exchange that I thought was just so beautiful between a monk named Wu Lin and Wei Nung. So, says Wu Lin came to visit, Wu Lun came to visit the sixth patriarch, Wei Nung, to present his understanding to the master. This was the exchange. He said, Wu Lun has skillful means, enabling him to cut off all thoughts. In the face of circumstances, his mind is not aroused, and daily, monthly, wisdom grows. So hear that. This is a monk that must have had a very great ability to concentrate. Perhaps could experience great peace. But he's asking here, is this liberation? Is this the mind that abides nowhere? Listen to it again. Wu Lun has skillful means, enabling him to cut off all thoughts. In the face of circumstances, his mind is not aroused, and daily, monthly, wisdom grows. To which Wei Nung replied, Wei Nung has no skillful means. He does not cut off all thoughts. In the face of circumstances, his mind is often aroused. So how can there be growth of wisdom? Indeed, a mind that abides nowhere. No stuck place. Hear it again. Wei Nung has no skillful means. He does not cut off all thoughts. In the face of circumstances, his mind is often aroused. So how can there be growth of wisdom? Right here. Right now. Thinking neither good nor evil. How will you manifest your Buddha nature? You Buddhas, please remember, when it comes to the mind that abides nowhere, there's just so much you don't need to know. We'll end there this morning.